Welcome to Reimagining Short-Term Missions, a podcast that takes an honest yet hopeful look at the things that the Church does in the name of missions, a podcast that seeks to inspire Christ followers to rethink the status quo of short-term missions and to forge a better way forward. We feature honest conversations with people from all over the world, those who go on mission trips and those who host them, and we don't shy away from tackling the hard and uncomfortable questions. Questions like, how can we learn about the history and culture of the people we go to serve? And even more importantly, how can we begin to build strong working relationships with our hosts before we go? How do we cultivate the humility among team members that helps us to work quietly alongside the people we visit, rather than assuming a role in the spotlight? Friends, there are better ways to love and serve the world, and it starts with courageous conversations. Welcome to Reimagining Short-Term Missions. Hey friends, Forrest Inslee here, co-editor with Angel Burns of the book Reimagining Short-Term Missions. Recently, Brandon Stiver and Phil Dark asked me to be a guest on their podcast called Think Global, Do Justice. Among other things, they wanted to ask me about the book, but we also talked about other interesting things like how we've been doing short-term missions at my home church, and even the story of how I came to adopt my daughter when I was a missionary. So, here's an abridged version of that conversation with Phil and Brandon on the Think Global, Do Justice podcast.
Well, Forrest, it's so great to have you on Think Global. How you doing?
It's good to be in here. Thanks so much. Waiting for snow on my end, actually.
You know, where I'm at, we don't really get snow. Except one time in my town, a little fun fact, on one half of the town it snowed, on my half it did not snow. So that's pretty much where we're at in the Northern California area. Can you just introduce yourself to our audience?
Sure. Currently, I'm a part-time professor in international community development, live in the Seattle area. I also work for an organization called Circlewood, and for that organization, I focus on environmental education for churches and also do a podcast called Earthkeepers. Just in terms of how I got here, as a student in InterVarsity, really made a commitment to both community development and even missions, and so did lots of grad school and seminary prep for that, and eventually ended up in Istanbul, Turkey, living there for a while, doing theological education, working with street kids, and my primary job was helping to start a church with a group of new Christ followers there. Eventually came back to Seattle after a number of years there and started an MA program in community development in the area, and I guess I've had 17 years now of prepping students for nonprofit work all over the world, and it's really through them that I tend to have my nonprofit involvement, and it's really fun. I get to be in contact with folks doing cool work all over the world, like anti-trafficking, social enterprise.
Why do you think it's important for Christians to not only think about their own family and community, which comes naturally when you're in your own backyard, but also consider the needs of people globally who we may never see, may never meet, ever?
Yeah, you know, I've actually thought about a version of that question recently, watching what's going on with Gaza, watching especially all the kids who are suffering because of that war. It's really made me ask, how long can we go on watching what's happening to people and guarding our hearts, walling off our hearts? If those were our own kids, we would be in despair. So I guess my answer that I'm coming to is I need to keep reminding myself that God loves all ethnic and nationalities just the same. Christ came into the world as an atoning sacrifice for all of us, and he taught us that we're to love our neighbors as ourselves. But I'm intrigued by the way you asked that question with that word families, because I think that for me has been a core issue in my life, is that whole journey to understanding what family really is. And I think one thing I've come to believe is that Jesus really redefines for us what family is. And in the New Testament especially, we see that family is no longer just about blood relation, but family is expanded and redefined on new terms and new commitments. You know, in Turkey, blood is a really big deal. Blood connection is everything, and you're hugely, fiercely committed to your family, and much less so with people outside of that network. It was hard for Turks to understand the idea that God adopts us into the family of God, because adoption is not a done thing in Turkey. People just don't do it. And so you end up with a lot of street kids, for example. I would teach about adoption, and I thought I'm really teaching against resistance, but I realized at some point that people were really hearing me and taking me seriously, because one day they came to me and said, "Oh, we know what you think about adoption and how committed you are to it. So we have a child for you that you're going to adopt. And we know this woman who needs to find a home for her child who's not yet born. And we told her that you'd take the child." So I was a single guy still, and I was single then. But in that moment, I thought, no, this is it. This is what God has for you. So I said yes right away, and then freaked out later on. So a few months later, took the baby into my home on the day she was born, and was a single person I desperately needed. My family of the church. So they surrounded us, and to this day, I still call them family. And just last year, I was at a wedding of one of the little kids at the time and traveled out there for that. So the long answer to your question is, I think God redefines family, and sometimes we can focus too much on what's ours, what's around us, at the expense of having compassion.
So you wrote a book, or edited a book. I understand that editing process is a fun one and exhausting one as well. So kudos to you on that. But on a very important topic, especially we've talked a lot about on this podcast, but reimagining short-term missions is the name of that book. What compelled you to undertake that project? As somebody once told me about editing a book, especially with multi-authors, is it's like herding cats. So what compelled you to undertake that project, and why do you find it necessary for people to reimagine short-term missions?
Most of that, the motivation comes from experience, especially when I was living longer term in Turkey. I would see and sometimes have to host short-term teams. And it was sometimes very discouraging watching what people came to do, expecting to do, ways that they came thinking that they were experts with a gift to give to the people. And just, it was a naivety, which I found profoundly disturbing. But I don't know, have you guys been involved in short-term mission trips, leading or participating?
All of the above.
I wonder, have there been times when you've been in the situations and this little voice says, "I'm not sure that this is what Paul meant," right? When he talks about the things he did on his missionary journey. Does that resonate with you?
Oh, for sure.
I think that that's actually the experience of most people who've been involved in short-term missions. On the one hand, they've got the best motives possible, right? It's biblical. Go and spread the gospel, make disciples of all nations. So who can fault that? But I think what has happened is that short-term missions has really become an industry in the last few decades. And we maybe have lost our way in terms of why we do it and what we do. And so really the book was in response to those questions that I think people are already asking, those suspicions that maybe we're not getting it right. Maybe there's a better way to use our time and resources. So we really set out to do this anthology of essays with two goals. The first goal was to, first of all, pay attention to voices outside of the Western church sphere. One of our main points in the book is that in terms of mission, we need to think in terms of the global church and to stop thinking of sender and receiver, right? That really the church is all over the world. So we need to work together. And those of us in the West who want to do something in terms of missions in, say, the Global South, we need to trust ourselves to the people in the Global South to know better how to use us as a resource. Maybe even to the point of saying, "We don't think you should come at all." But that just takes real humility, and it's not a Western mindset to think in those more collaborative terms. And so the other main theme of the book is a word that we ended up making up, and that word is co-powerment. And that word stands against empowerment, which is a limited word. Empowerment is useful at times. It implies that there's someone who has power or resources and they're giving it to someone else. And so aid agencies, mission agencies speak in terms of empowerment, as well they should. But the point we're making in the book is that sometimes we shouldn't think in those terms. Sometimes we shouldn't assume that we have the upper hand, that because we have the resources that we can call the shots and pretend that we're experts. So co-powerment is more of an interactive dynamic that I need you to make me possible as much as you need me to make you possible, right? So if I feel like I really want to obey the Bible and get involved in missions, I shouldn't be the one to determine exactly what that looks like. I should actually ask others in the global church, what can this look like in ways that are collaborative, that draw on context knowledge that you have that I simply don't. So I think that's really the point of the book. And it's the reason we try to include a lot of voices from all around the world, is because it represents that co-powering dynamic that we're trying to promote.
I love that. The book that I wrote was similarly, it was 15 co-authors, people who have worked in different places around the world, brought in some people from around the world, and it was so powerful. But that idea of doing that is so good, because even if it's similar backgrounds, it's something that brings in such different voices from different places, and for people to learn from each other as well, and being able to edit that. I no doubt you were challenged and you were encouraged and you were emboldened, hopefully, to really have clarity on different things, which is awesome. So thanks for doing that. That's fantastic. So we always like to have part of this conversation be, what's a promising practice? What is something good going on? What do you see that's encouraging you about what's going on with short-term missions currently?
Well, I would say that to your point about my being affected by the work I was editing, it really was encouraging to hear the stories of people who are in the quote-unquote mission field, who are doing things differently, finding ways forward that are more collaborative, are based more on mutual humility and mutual collaboration. So I think in the book, there are lots and lots of encouraging stories, but maybe the one I'm closest to, just to give you an example, is my own church here in Seattle, which is Bethany Community Church. We've historically built any missions involvement on partnership, long-term partnership. So for example, we have partnership with churches and nonprofits in Rwanda. And in those relationships, we as a church submit ourselves to their guidance in what our involvement looks like. And even if we're offering them resources, we're never offering resources on the condition of this is what you must do with this, right? But we ask the folks there, how can this make the biggest impact? How can this help us to be obedient to the Great Commission? And so I think that relationship has really shaped even short-term missions, because the people who go to Rwanda are really going more for reasons of education and learning and partnership, building those relationships. More recently, I think we've built enough trust as a church that the Rwandan folks have asked us to help them teach things that we might know, say certain kinds of leadership approaches, et cetera, or nonprofit management, what have you. And that kind of trust only comes over time, and it only comes in a relationship where you're acknowledging that both sides have something to offer. Both sides are equally valuable in the equation. I'm most excited by maybe what's happened most recently in that same relationship. We've begun to practice reverse missions. So we have Rwandans coming to us and consulting with us. And for example, our church has a ministry to folks who are homeless or involved in the sex trade, etc. And we have asked the Rwandan folks to speak into our ministries, to evaluate them and give us feedback from outside of the Western perspective. And so we get wisdom that we just would not otherwise get. And I just think that I laud the humility of the leaders in our church to be that open, because that's risky, right? And it wars against the mentality that we're taught in the Western world, that it's the expert who holds the power. And so we need to know what we're doing and we need to lead. But oftentimes that translates into hubris, obviously.
Forrest, I would love, just as we wrap up our time, we have an audience that is passionate about God, passionate about setting things right in the world, seeing communities develop, progress, and so forth. Would love if you could just quickly give us your best piece of advice for someone that is pursuing God's heart of justice in the nations. What would be one thing that you would recommend that they do? Something practical, something they can jump into.
Well, I love it that we're ending a conversation on themes of humility and listening and teachability, because I really think that that is the key. When you say justice, I would say that we as Western Christ followers need to, first of all, learn that justice can be defined both in terms of environmental justice and social justice, and that the two are really interconnected. So I would say, first of all, define justice for what it really could be, just more broadly and holistically, don't assume that you know what justice or injustice looks like. And I would say part of that is confessing to God at the outset that, like all human beings, we see the world through cultural biases. And we have to ask God to help us to see more clearly. And then in true humility, take the time to listen and to learn from those who live in the context of injustice, and let them and the Holy Spirit guide us in how to pursue justice.
You've been listening to the Reimagining Short-Term Missions podcast. If you want to explore more diverse and challenging perspectives like this, check out Reimagining Short-Term Missions, which includes chapters written by our podcast guests and from many more STM innovators from around the world. Your podcast host is Forrest Inslee, co-editor of that book and a professor of global studies at Northwest University in Seattle. Angel Burns is the book's co-editor, and our podcast producer is Heath Hollinsby. Friends, what we need now is nothing short of a revolution in short-term missions. So please help us spread the word by sharing this podcast with others of like heart and mind. This is the time for reimagining short-term missions.